Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Worsham, and with us on this fantastic day, new guest of the show, Jessica Winther. I met Jessica doing a fantastic parenting comedy show, and we chopped it up a while ago. Wow, it's almost been a year. It would have been November, right? Is that vibe? Is that vibe with what you remember? Yeah. And she's just a shit ton of fun, Miss Jessica, to put it bluntly. And so I thought, oh, would you like to come on my podcast? And she said yes. And so now here we are. Here we are today. How are you doing on this fine day, Miss Jessica?
Oh, I'm doing splendid. Living the dream.
Living the dream. Let's first get the stats. How many kids do you have? What ages? Sex? All that stuff.
Okay, I have two kids. I have an 18-year-old. Actually, he's going to be 18 in a month. I've already just pushed him out. An 18-year-old. He's like, get out. 18-year-old son and a 13-year-old daughter.
Perfect. So, oh, the teens.
The teens.
Yeah. Okay. And let's crank through this usual question list that I do for new people, just so people can get an idea of who you are. Are you married or no?
Oh, yeah, I'm married.
All right. Oh, yeah, I'm married.
Today, for now.
Do you have a hall pass list? Are you familiar with the celebrity hall pass list? Do you guys have that within your relationship?
No, we don't.
So you don't have like a celebrity crush in any way, shape, or form that if you were to meet said person. Although I'm realizing as I started doing this that especially for guests that are here in LA, the social circles you travel in could actually meet said person. Maybe it changes things for you.
It does because my husband's in the film business and I work in the film business as well. So yeah, it does change it.
It does. It makes things a little awkward that it's like, hey, oh, by the way, you're on my hall pass list.
Right. I think I have to do rock star hall pass.
What would be your rock star crush then?
God, I don't have. Sting was my rock star crush for forever. And then I met him.
So you don't meet your heroes or your crushes?
I was like, oh my God, he's so amazing. And then I met him and he was so arrogant. And I thought, that's kind of hot, but not.
Yeah.
So like it was a weird dynamic. Like I was like, you're so amazing. And the music you sing is it's so spiritual and it touches me. And then he was such an arrogant Englishman. And I was like, I don't know if that's going to work for me.
I feel like I would like to know what it's like to be that big where just everybody thinks that you're great. I wonder how hard it is to maintain humility when you're someone like a Sting, right?
Right.
Or is it that you have to be wired a certain way to where you're like, you know what? I'm going to call myself Sting. That's what I'm going to do.
Totally. I'm just going to get rid of my name, Gordon, because I hated it.
Right.
And I'm just Sting. And that's the mark I leave in your body. Like, I don't. But at the time, he was definitely doing all the tantric conversation. And he was like, I am this guru in life. I'm so intelligent. And I'm like, you are. And then I was like, I don't care. You know, it didn't matter. He was an ass, actually. I hate saying that a lot, but he was kind of an ass.
Realistically, how long do you think people should be having sex? Because I feel like 45 minutes to an hour is really pushing it. Is that just because I'm a horrible man and a two-pump chump?
Is this the next question?
No, it's not.
This just
came up, but I'm just...
Okay. I'm with you. I'm like, wow, we just went from like Sting. I guess I said tantric and now we're like fully going on how long should we be fucking?
Right.
Oh God, I'm cursing. I'm sorry.
No, you can curse all you want. Fuck, fuck, fuck.
Okay, good.
But here's the thing. I won't put you on the spot, but I just feel like, I feel like an hour is a good enough number. I feel like an hour should be close to, I don't know what I could be doing once I'm in 6 hours of something like, and I feel like I don't want sex to become a job. Like I feel like when Sting has sex, there's just a lot of staring, and you know what I mean. Like, is it?
It's a meditation. It's a meditation. It's not sex. It's a meditation, and it's an. He was looking for another experience that didn't use drugs. Okay, he was like, "How do I get to that place?" Right.
So I'm the dumb guy who knows nothing about like spirituality and Eastern medicine. Oh. Who I think
like
when
my
you
husband.
Think ten, yeah, exactly. when you think tantric, all you think is sex. Like it's more of a meditation than it is sexual.
Yeah, no, it's all about the feel. It's like a massage.
Oh, that makes so much more sense. And yeah, go for it all. 12 hours. Yeah, I love it. Good call.
Dude, I can't even do a 12-hour. After an hour, I'm like, okay, get up. Stop touching me. I got to move on. Right? I'll be laying on the bed like, I got shit to do. Oh, I got laundry. Right? I got to get to the store. I got to pick up. Oh, no. Like, hurry up.
I feel like I'm newly educated. But based on my previous assumptions about what all that was about, I always have had this thought of like, I feel like it would be like a meditation to be forced to have sex with Sting for 8 hours. Like just the ability to focus in on just that would be a true test of my mental fortitude.
I can't focus on anything that long. Okay. I was just like, wow, this is interesting.
Now we're going back to the questions for you, Jessica. Last movie you cried at.
What it was the last? Oh my God! I don't even want to tell you.
Why? It
was.
I cry at every movie. I cried at Blue Steel. If it makes you feel any more comfortable.
Okay,
that's Blue the robot Steel, fighting I, movie with Hugh Jackman.
Okay, but that makes sense.
What?
You're probably crying to get the fuck out.
No, I was like, crying because I was moved emotionally. Yeah, well, I didn't love the movie, but it's easy. I'm an easy cry. That's why I like this question. I'm always curious to see. And it's funny because usually the women on the show have much harder. There's a couple dudes who've been like, "Dude, you're a pansy." But a lot of the chicks on the show have much better, like, oh, yeah, you have to cry, otherwise you don't have a soul. So we'll see where you fall in this spectrum, Jessica.
Oh, I think I'm soulless. No, I'm just kidding. I'm trying to think of the last movie I cried. I feel like it was, it was a Marvel film. This is my mind. This is what's happened to me, okay? This is, like, where I've gone now. Marvel film, it was with the little characters.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Guardians of the Galaxy. I cried at the end when the dad was there and the son. Oh my God! And the son and the dad. I was crying.
That was Volume 2. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's so you're crying at the sequel to Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a good movie. Yes. It's a solid one. Yeah, I like it.
No. It was just the relationship. Clearly, I have father issues.
If you could have any job besides the one you currently do, what would you like that job to be? But you. This is a tough question, I imagine, for you because you wear a lot of hats.
I do wear. No, I mean, I kind of wear a lot of hats. But if I had a job, what would it be? I don't even. My God, I.
Because you wear many hats within the entertainment industry.
I would be a world. Is this a job? I would be a world traveler.
Oh, no, that's good.
Is that a job?
Yeah.
I could make it a job. Yeah. I would travel the world and write about where I go. Or can I just travel the world and just enjoy it?
I think you'd have to do something for it to be a job, but I like where your head's at. I like that. Like your first go-to is just some kind of thing. Can people just give me money so that I can experience life while they work? Is that odd
that I would ask that? I am 46. I am over it. Okay, I want to just live.
That's so good. If you're gonna do like a travel journalism, would you rather like write articles or would you prefer just to make videos of you? Because here's the thing. I think we're in uncharted territory. Is that I imagine just based on the few conversations I've had with you, this could be a viable option for you, Jessica. Is that you go to you go to a Bora Bora situation. You know what I mean? Whatever it is those huts that are like 8 feet up off of the ocean, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere and you just exist as in like this beautiful landscape. But Jessica is over that. Like she's just like, it's hot here. There's a lot of wind.
Totally.
My hair is frizzy. I don't get it.
By the way, I've been to Bora Bora. I've stayed in a hut there. And I will tell you, I was like, this is gorgeous. This is amazing. They stole my necklace. And then I went out on the water. So yes, you are right. I went out on the water and it was like, it's so beautiful. You can see all the way through. And I was like, this is incredible. Then the clouds came over and I looked down and all of the eels started coming up from the bottom. Okay. That's my experience of that. So yes, that's what it would look like. Oh my God, there's eels. Don't get in the water. It's dangerous.
And see, this is why this could be a thing for you is that rather than you just traveling the world, having a better life than everyone, what you do is people pay you to go out and experience these things that regular working class people perceive to be amazing, but you remind us how not great they are. That we're not missing anything by being in our cubicle in Cincinnati.
Yes. Oh, this is my, I'm doing it. Yeah. You just gave it to me and I'm off. See, I'm doing it. Absolutely. This place is a piece of shit. You don't want to stay here. It's like, do you see the scorpions? Do you see what's happened? Dirt. Oh, it's, yeah. Oh my God. It would be amazing. You think this is your dream? No. Stay right where you are in that cubicle.
It's safe. It's normal. It's great. Yes. No letdown whatsoever. Keep the bar low. That's what I always say. What do you want most for your children? Like out of life?
For them to be happy.
Yeah. How do you like?
I want them to enjoy their lives.
Do you wish that they could have a job where they could also get paid to travel around places? Or
I would like my kids to just do what fills them up inside. So they just, it doesn't matter what they do, as long as they feel secure, confident, and live their lives. I don't care if they're my son's a musician. Uh-huh. He started off as a baseball player, and he played baseball since he was 5 years old.
Wow.
And I coached that team. It was amazing because I knew nothing about baseball. So
that's
only
great. You were Goldie Hawn in Wildcats. That's
yes, awesome. It's me. Okay. But he played baseball, and we as parents, I know I'm going off, but actually I think this is important for people to hear. We as parents saw like, oh, he's good at this. Let's just keep going. Let's keep going. And we got on this track of baseball where every living waking moment was like baseball, 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 baseball. And he went all the way up and he was on a D1 path. Like that's where he was going. And then he got sick and he played music and he did other things all along the way. And he got sick and he couldn't play baseball anymore.
Yeah.
And he's picked music. And it's been an interesting journey to watch because what you think you want, oh, I got to get my kid to college. And oh, I got to get my kid here and he's got to get straight A's. And oh, my kid's got to be like, they've got to be that mold that we all want to see our kids, right? We want them to do better than we are. And we want them to be better than we are and do better than we did. And then all of a sudden your life shifts and he went in this music. And one day I walked in his room. I'm like, oh my God, are you Steve Jobs or a serial killer? Like he was in there with a hoodie. I was like, what's happening? And he was just mixing music and it makes him happy. So I look at it and because he's happy, I think his success will be that. And he will be successful no matter what. It's not about the money. It's not about what college you went to and who. It's really about finding your inner happiness. And that's what I want for my kids.
Yeah. And what I like about the way you're talking about this is that you kind of learned as a parent, right? Yes. Which I think we all do, that it's about the journey, right? Like you think you've hit it, no matter what it is, but what you're saying is it's about finding that happiness, not necessarily just, creating, trying to manifest it, which can be very difficult, I imagine. You know what I mean?
Well,
does that make sense?
I think as parents, we have a vision of what we want to see for our kids, right?
Yeah.
Everything our parents fucked us up on, we're like, oh, we're not going to do that, which we do anyways.
Right.
But it's like what the dreams you didn't live. I see a lot of dads and it's like, oh, I should have been. And yes. I'm like, but you weren't. Okay.
I'm going through something kid. Like this right now, actually, where it's I did stand up, right? I was out on the road a ton. And I don't know if this came up when we were talking in the green room at the show we did. I love making people laugh. It's been the thing that has defined me my entire life, right? But when I had a family, what I realized is that I felt like I was good at it, right? I was good at making people laugh. I was making good money. I was paying the bills. But that lifestyle was not what was going to make me happy because it took me away from my wife and kids, which is what really made me happy. Like I wanted a kind of a more suburban type lifestyle. That's for me personally. It doesn't have to be for everyone. And so then I shifted to a different thing. But the entire time, from the time I was 6 years old, I thought that making people laugh, that was going to be what I did. Makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, and
by the way, it is still what you do.
It's true. No, it's true. You're right. But am I making sense? It shifts, but it's like, but you think that that's your only way, that if I'm not in front of a room full of strangers, right, then I'm not making people laugh and I'm not being my true self, that kind
of thing.
But it's not that.
Did you feel like when you changed your choice for your family,
right,
did you feel that you gave something up?
No. I worried that I was. I honestly worried that I was. But the longer the time passed, because what happened was the minute I wasn't gone on the road 3-4 weeks out of every month, the more it was like, oh, this is such a and it's different. Everybody's different. I mean, you know what I mean? I don't think that everybody should be listening to this and going, well, comedy's bad for everyone. That's obviously not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying,
I totally feel that. I don't know if I can handle it. No, absolutely. No, I think I hear what you're saying. You're actually saying I made a choice for myself. You made another choice. By the way, this doesn't mean when your kids are not older that you won't take that step and turn it into something else.
Right. Right. Tom Wilson, who is more famously known as Biff from Back to the Future. I was working with him on the road and he actually helped me out a ton when my wife was pregnant with our second son and things were just bad financially. And she does home loans. And so this was in the, you know, around the crash is still coming out of the crash. It was just a rough go. And he was so sweet. He came up to me after my set. I was opening him as the first show of the week. And he goes, dude, that was really great. I said, oh, thanks. And he goes, and he like stops me and he goes, no, seriously. He goes, you see a lot of, you know, average people in this slot on the road. He goes, I'm on the road all the time. And he goes, I'm looking at you. And he goes, I'm sitting there watching him like, this is a guy who cares about his craft and he's going to be doing this for a long time. And I literally had just gotten off the phone with my wife hours before that show. And I was like, oh, that's funny. And I just had this moment of honesty with this guy that I admired. I'd seen him before, not knowing him as Biff from Back to the Future, but I'd seen him do stand up before and just really liked what he did. And I'd asked to do this week. The club manager brought so it was a big deal for me. And I just had this moment of honesty where I just said, oh, that's great. I go, but I think I have to quit. And it was this great comedy moment where he was like, what? And he had a guitar because he opens with a guitar bit where he spits a ping pong ball out of his mouth. And it was this great moment in comedy where he goes, we'll talk. And he puts a ping pong ball in his mouth and starts playing his guitar as he walks towards the stage. But after the show, we talked and he was such a great guy. He said, listen, he goes, maybe you can't be on the road, right? He goes, but you find maybe it's your podcast or you write a book or you do whatever. He goes, you just find a different path to do stuff that, like what you're talking about, what you want for your kid. You find a different path that makes you fulfilled, and you just keep plugging away, and things work out. And he couldn't have been more correct. I owe the guy a ton.
Well, and also, I think we pigeonhole ourselves.
Yes.
We get into a place of like, this is who I am. Well, I feel like the beauty of our world, even though it's crazy, but there is a beautiful thing of where we are realizing we don't have to live in that box.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And the box is one sided, two sided, four, six sides, and it breaks and we can jump out. We're not all the Jack in the box. It's like, hey, here we are. We can be and do who we want to be and what we want to do and find so many different avenues. You know, we're not just working in a, I don't know. Oh my God. It was so funny. I'm thinking of a paper house. This is how my mind works. It's so crazy. I don't know why I was like going to newspapers.
That's awesome.
In my mind, I was like, okay, I guess journalism. But we don't have to lock ourselves into being just the mailman or, you know, we can do so many things. All these Uber drivers that I get in, they're like, oh, I'm a musician. Oh, I'm a producer. I'm like, look, everybody's putting their hands out there. So, you know, right now in our lives and in it, we have an opportunity to be exactly who we want to be.
I agree. And it's on a similar note, which I struggle with jealousy in this manner. But my kids have stumbled across this guy who basically makes videos of himself playing Fortnite. And he's good at it. He's interesting and he's compelling. But he's got like 10 million views on his YouTube videos. And then I just happened to stumble upon him, and then he plugs a new channel he's created with his girlfriend or whatever. And one of them is he's giving us this tour of his palatial estate in the UK that they just bought and how they're custom. And this kid's got to be 24, Jessica.
Absolutely.
Like, and there's a part of me that's like, man, that everybody would like to have a little bit of that, right? To have those kinds of things.
And it seemed like it was so easy. It was easy for this kid, right?
He's like,
I'm going to play Fortnite and I'm going to video myself.
Right.
And then I'm going to get this fat ass house because somebody gave me money because I have 10,000 followers.
But in actuality,
crazy.
He works. He works at what he does. He's found the thing
hard
that fulfills him. And yes, and he busts his butt. He markets like crazy and he's built a business. And I should be. And that's what I decided after watching this. I was like, this guy should be celebrated. He deserves it, man. He worked for everything that he got, even though by today's definition, he's a YouTube star, using quotes. And hasn't really worked at all. But no, there's an avenue that he found. He had an angle, he played it, and it worked. Good for him, right?
Well, I just ran into another YouTube star. His name's Faze Banks. I'm going to say this wrong because I think that's his name. Uh-huh. And we were at the premiere for Ant-Man 2. Uh-huh. And I'm walking up and I have my kids with me and they're like, and my girlfriend's kids and like, oh my God, that's Faze Banks. I heard face paint, just so we're clear. That's what I heard. Okay. So this is the second time we've run into these YouTube kids and I don't know who they are. I don't know anybody. So I, of course, I'm standing next to him and I'm like, what's up, face paint? I'm awful. I mean, I couldn't even handle it. That's but great. Then I'm like, who are you? And he goes, yeah, I have a YouTube show. And I watched a little bit of his YouTube show and I was like, it's him and his girlfriend hanging out.
Yeah.
Like shopping at Gucci. And I was like, oh my God. And I said, how did you get into the premiere? Like, how did the, and he's like, I said, because you're a YouTuber. And he's like, yeah, I guess so.
Right.
And I'm like, God, I can't even, it's so, and I was, and then of course I made this whole, I'm like, I'm not young enough.
Well, to a certain extent, it's not an aesthetic thing, but it is funny because people that are our age, we look at it and we're like, I don't get it. Like, even when I'm watching, there's a part of me that's like, and it's so funny that it's so simple, it looks too easy. Like that, but if you and I believe this, if you or I tried to do that, there's no way we could, I don't think we could connect as well to this younger audience and this is what they want. But to get back to what got us onto this is that we do live in this world where you can create anything and eventually you can find an audience and you can create a business. It is a really solid time to be alive and to have ideas and be creative. I think it couldn't be better. Last question on my little questionnaire here is last argument you had with your spouse, if you're comfortable sharing with us. I'm always fascinated by the minutia of marriage. I just like the things that, you know what I mean? I don't know why per se. But.
I'm super comfortable with sharing everything, which is traumatizing for my husband because I usually do it on stage. Okay? And he's just like, oh, I'm good. I'm good. I'm like, really? Were you good with the fact that I just said I'm not fucking you? Because I don't know if you're good with that. All your friends are here. It's weird. But I mean, I'm kind of kidding. And so, yes, the last argument we had was a recent argument. We went out dancing and just to give you a little precursor, I started doing stand-up almost two years ago. And it wasn't something that I don't know if I've been funny all my life like you. I think people laughed at me a lot, but I don't know if it was because of my humor. So I started doing stand-up and I was an actress and that's what I did. And then I stopped to be a parent. But we were out and now I have a newfound freedom. Okay. So I'm out. I'm in New Orleans. It's Mardi Gras. We're dancing. We fought after this, but this one actually was a big one and I like sharing it.
Okay.
He looks at me and I start dancing with this guy and he's like, my God, you're an attention monger. And I was like, are you kidding me? So yeah, I was like, okay, here we go. That was our fight. And it turned into a big deal all night. He was drinking a little bit too much. I was drinking, but it doesn't affect me like that. And he went crazy because he couldn't believe that I was just out there like dancing and being so free. I'm not really sure what was happening that night, but it turned into a big fight and we were staying with friends and it was like, yeah, it was kind of nasty. I was like, wow, attention monger. I'm like, you've been married to me for 18 years and you finally see me? Great. Wow. But yeah, that was kind of our fight. Yeah.
And do you think that that's I can't imagine that you could be married to you, Jessica, for as long as he has. And be a jealous type person. Like, you know, am I wrong? Or?
Well, I think because I've taken this step into stand up and I don't know if it's a jealous, like, I think there's moments where it's like, I had a baby. I got pregnant 6 months into our relationship. Mm. So I had a baby and when I had kids, I grew up like a hippy dippy child in the middle of Vegas and Canada shared. So I kind of, and I raised myself. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be the perfect mom. I'm going to be this. So I had I had my son and I was like, oh, you can't wear short skirts and you're not going to smoke cigarettes and you're not going to drink and you're going to be a straight parent. And I really, it was weird. I guess I did. I kind of changed who I was to parent my kids. Because I felt like I had grown up in the Wild West. And so I was like, I'm going to give them a structured life. And so I did. I mean, I'm still me. I can't run from me. Like my personality just flings out. But I focused solely on the children.
But you would say you were probably a more restrained you when it came to your kids, right? But no, that's a fair thing. I think.
Yeah.
I think we all do that too. So, I mean, if you look at the most rock and roll of rock and roll guys, once they have kids and a family, they kind of mellow out. Like it's just a phase of life, right? It's not disingenuous. It's not inorganic. In fact, it is organic. It's just the progression.
Yes, and you also want to lead by example. Yeah. I don't come from the cloth of do as I say, not as I do. Yeah. It was like, oh, I have to lead by example. And my husband he works on location, so he's gone all the time. So I was really the person that they were looking at. And I kind of had an identity crisis when I had my kids, actually. But I definitely toned myself down and focused solely on my kids and being a PTA and running the PTA and being that parent. Like this, everything I used in my life and my career beforehand, I put on my kids. So I became that crazy mom. I was like, I'm going to be the room parent and I'm going to raise all the money for the school and I'm going to make those weird little treats that are Rice Krispie treats, but they're going to make them look like sushi. Okay. Like I was that parent. So,
and what's great is your kids only have grown up knowing that side of you, right?
Yes. I didn't tell them anything about my entire, I was told.
I didn't tell them anything.
I mean,
anything.
They know I'm off the wall.
I just love the tone in your voice. I didn't tell them. You even whispered it. I didn't tell them anything. They have no fucking clue how crazy I am.
Because it's true. Like, I didn't want them to be like, oh, she's crazy. I can be crazy.
Yeah.
By the way, I have two totally normal children as of this moment. I mean, I'm not normal because they're not. But like, compared to me, I'm like, wow, how did that happen? What is it? Because I know genetics plays a part. Is it just going to show up later? You know,
but I think what it is that, and I think everybody does this to a certain extent, where everything is a reaction to what you grew up with, be it good or bad, based on your perception. And like you said, is that you grew up and you felt in some way, shape or form. There are probably lots of people who grew up with a more hippy dippy lifestyle and they liked the lack of structure. They found comfort
in
that. But for you, you felt like you reacted to it and going, you know what? I want somebody that I feel is more involved. And as somebody who's interviewed a ton of child development specialists, and I find this really interesting, is that the biggest thing what they're finding is the most important element to your relationship with your child is what they define as being secure attachment. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you are physically there with them at all times. What it means is that on almost subconscious level, your child innately knows that you are there for them and that you are taking care of them. Even if you're traveling for your work, that part's not relevant, is that there
is a
connection.
It's the emotional attachment. Yes.
Correct. Yes. And it feels like what you're doing is that you felt like you did not have that secure attachment and you wanted to make sure that you established it and you made it a hard line. Like it is a direct
hotline.
Oh, yeah.
No, I went to the next level. Okay. Because that's awesome. How I function, right? So there's no, it's either you're in one place or you're at the bottom or the top. Yeah. There's no in between. Yeah. So yeah, I took it to the next level and I did that. And I have to say, I feel like it might have worked.
Sounds awesome. You know what? Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back because I want to talk to you. Pitch this great idea and that talking about what happens with your relationship as your kids get older, because this is a world that I am not familiar with, but I know a lot of my listeners are. They have, you know, older kids. They make fun of me because I'm kind of looking forward to the teenage years and all of that stuff, which it's very frightening and a scary time I'm hearing. But also I want to talk a little bit because I think it can connect. I'm curious about what you said about how having kids kind of created an identity crisis in that. So let's talk about that when we come back after these messages.
And I wish.
Oh, I've been saying this to you as multiple times today, even in this episode. I'm fascinated by the idea of this topic because it's something I think about all the time that Jessica was talking about. Because her kids are older, she mentioned that she would love to talk about the idea of how your relationship changes when your kids get older. I think the for people who when you're in the when you have the baby, right, everything is always about the baby. And yep. I think the most common situation that can come out of this is where you become so focused on the kids and then on the baby that it kind of transitions in their kids and then they grow old and you're not really focused on your partner. And then as now you've got two shifts, right? You've got a shift in the relationship as your kid is transitioning into adulthood that changes the dynamic between you and the kid. And then also what happens as the kids start to leave or move on or are just even going out when they're teenagers and they don't need you, you know, always with them kind of a thing. And then now you're back with your partner after taking almost a 20-year hiatus from focusing in on each other. And I'm super fascinated by that. And I don't know if it ties in, but I'm also fascinated by what you said is that having kids was kind of an identity crisis for you in that. Now, when you said that, let's start there. When you said that, was that more because you were, because I feel like we kind of already touched on it, is that it's, was it more in reaction to your upbringing and that it you had to kind of realign who you were, or did you, were you, because it doesn't sound like you questioned your choices of refocusing yourself going, I'm going to be like, you know, the best mom I can be. I'm going to be Mrs. Cleaver. I'm going to crush this. It didn't seem like you had any kind of crisis in that choice.
Before I had kids, I was a budding actress. I was doing plays. I was drinking. I was smoking. I was living my life as a 20-year-old.
Doing everything that is the opposite of the suburban lifestyle. Yeah,
absolutely. Right. I lived in West Hollywood on Dick Street. Like, I mean, it really was amazing. And then I got pregnant and then I had my son. And I think it was like, I was like, oh my God, I can't be that person anymore. So I can still be the crazy Jessica mentally, but I couldn't, that lifestyle had to kind of end for me because I had to focus and I moved to the Valley. It was weird. I got pregnant. I was like, okay, we got to move to the Valley.
That's what you do.
Stanford and the Valley. It was such a weird psychological thing. Like, oh, now it's time to move to suburbia.
Yeah.
Like, and we did, we were living in the canyon and I was like, oh no. And for me, I think it's, I mean, I have tons of friends that still live in the canyon and do their whole thing and they're amazing. And they've lived their lives all the way through their kids. They still party, they still work, they still do it. But I was, because my husband was gone so much, I felt like for me to keep working as an actress would take too much time and too much effort out of me. And then what? I hire a nanny to raise my kids. That's not what I wanted. So it kind of gave me an identity crisis because I was like, oh my God, I've got to be this woman who's home and making breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I had a baby who wasn't colicky, but was kind of miserable. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I'm the sole parent.
Yeah.
And I didn't have family here. And all my friends were young actors.
Yep.
And rock star, and all these, they were all out there still living. Nobody had kids. I was the only one.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do I do? Where do I go? Okay, this is what you're going to do. And again, I go from 0 to 100. So I was like, I gave everything. And it really, I mean, at one point, I think I even was like, okay, you can't drink coffee anymore. I mean, then I got over that quickly, but I was like,
that's just crazy talk.
That's like, what? Yeah. That was like, what? But it was, I definitely changed my lifestyle. I stopped drinking for 10 years and not that I was a heavy drinker. I never was, but I literally was like, I just don't think it's okay to really have a lot of alcohol in the house. Like, I don't know what happened to me, but I did go a little Stefford-y. Like, I did.
But you would never look at, like, if you were ever over at somebody else's house and somebody else was having a glass of wine, it's not like what you're not saying that you would judge them or look at. It's just you're like, I want to really be, I want to dump everything I have into these kids. And the reason I bring it up from this standpoint is I'm curious because now that your kids are older, do you look back and go, maybe I worry too much, or I overcommitted, or I regret giving so much? Or do you look back, you're like, no, I'm happy with everything than the way it went down?
Oh, no.
It is a loaded question. You're right.
Oh, it is so loaded, right? I went a little cray cray. I took all the energy that I would put into my work and put it into my kids.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we see with a lot of overbearing parents, actually, is when they stop necessarily doing their career to be parents or mothers or fathers, because now we have everything.
Yep.
But like where they stop using that energy and focusing it solely on their kids. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God. And you're the one going, okay, Jimmy, do not climb that, you know? And like, don't walk outside. And oh my, every move they make, we're micromanaging, right?
So would you qualify yourself as that? Do you think you were overbearing? Cause it sounds, what I'm hearing is you were really focused on the gig and just wanted to be ready and thoughtful in the gig. But You would let your kids fall or play in the dirt
what I mean? But inside my mind, outwardly, I was like, let them run in the street. They're just going to get hit. Like I still am like that with my kids. I always am very much like, go out and experience. You have to fall to know how to get back up. You have to get hurt to know you don't want to do it again. So absolutely, I wasn't an overbearing parent in that way, but I definitely pushed my first child. I pushed him hard. And I look back now, and my husband had a dream of being a baseball player. My son was good at it. He wanted to be a hockey player.
Yeah.
And he was like, get him into hockey. And my kid was like, I'd rather just do like freestyle. So we pushed him. He was our first. And I like to say this to anyone when I'll talk to them, and I'm like, oh, you're the first. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh, you fucked that one up. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the one that you kind of put all your eggs in that basket, right?
Yeah.
It's your first experiment. It's your first anything. So you're like, oh, and you're learning. So I definitely gave a lot of myself to my son, and sometimes to the point where I pushed him probably over. Like, I was like, what do you mean you got to be?
Yeah.
Okay, well, please, really? Like, who cares? The most successful people are C people. There's books all about it, right?
Right.
So, but I was like, oh, what do you mean? Or he'd get off the baseball field and we'd be like, you could have done better. Those moments I regret. Those moments I look back, and I actually have very few regrets. That might be one of the only regrets where I'm like, really? Because that's where your kids, when they're getting off the baseball field or they're getting off of something, they need you to say, dude, it's okay. Let's go. The coaches, the experience, they need us to be like, all right, maybe it wasn't your best game, but let's go. Like, we kind of rode our son academically and in sports. That I feel like, oh God. But for the most part, I don't regret. There was a moment where I felt like this is so honest. I can't even believe I'm saying this. There's a moment where I felt like when my son's 18, my daughter's 13 recently, where I was like, God, I got to get my shit together. Like my kids need to see me actually working and not just being the mom that's there. And I saw with my daughter how that actually affected her, because both my kids are kind of shy and introverted. Go figure. I'm their crazy mom. they're like, oh God, we don't want to be like her. But they're both kind of shy and introverted, and they're both sweet, like sweet. As I say this, I'm not like, wow, my kids are great, because they're
right.
Fucked up.
Everybody's got flaws, right? No, they're people. They're good people.
I'm always shocked at like decisions they make. Like, I'm like, wow. But my daughter was at school, and she was being bullied by a parent and a kid, which is a whole other conversation. Ugh. And I decided to go back to work, right? And she looked at me and she was like, all of a sudden I was cool because I had lost my coolness for her.
Oh, that's interesting.
And she took back her personality, like she took back her power, because she's like, that's right, my mom's working. Look at me. It was interesting. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause what my first thought when I heard you say that was to kind of, from an outside perspective, look at it, because when we started this show, you said that you want your kids to find happiness and to feel fulfilled. Right. And I would argue to a parent who's like, well, now I need to see, especially I think, women put pressure on themselves more so than guys struggling with this. Although Yeah, I'm going to backpedal on that, is that if you're a stay-at-home dad, there one could argue that even living in this time, there's still a little bit more societal pressure for you to, you should be the breadwinner.
Absolutely.
Whereas for a woman, you could be like, oh, you've given up, you know what I mean? Or, you know what I mean? You're less of a person because you're a stay-at-home mom. And but if that's what fulfills you, right? If that's what you like to do and you find comfort in your own skin in that, then absolutely. Then there is, I don't think that there is, and I don't think this is what you're saying, but I don't think there is a harm in being a mom by any stretch of the imagination, and even being only a mom if you are so blessed to be able to pull that off.
By the way, it is a gift, and it's the hardest job, an underrated job on the planet.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at a lot of teenage girls right now. And I'm looking at these parents that, by the way, are going, oh my God, I'm like, they think they are perfect parents, right? And they're, and I'm kind of looking at, and I'm the first one to say, ugh, I'm the worst parent. Like, I'm the worst parent. But it's amazing to see these kids. And I'm like, our kids need us. Like, this is, I have a lot of parents that are working and their kids have been raised by nannies. And this, again, there's no judgment because I respect. For me, every job is hard.
Right.
What kids are hard. Having kids and working is hard. Not working is sometimes harder because you're dealing with the politics of the parents, of other parents, which is the hardest job on the planet because you're not getting paid for it and you have to deal with it.
Yep. And if you're a working parent, you constantly are wrestling with the guilt of not being able to be around the kids more. You can't go to all of the little shows and whatever it is that they got going. You can't volunteer in the room.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. Yeah.
All my working moms are always like, I can't find the balance. I can't find the balance. And I'm like, listen, you're just doing the best you can. We all just do the best we can.
Right.
There's 1,000 books. There's tons of theories. But at the end of the day, I've seen psychiatrists that have fucked up kids. I've seen, it makes me laugh. And they're children's psychologists.
Yeah.
The head of school, and the head of school's son is out there smoking crack and drinking and can't stay in a college because he's all lost in some world. And it's like, you can't, like, it doesn't, I think it's, we just try our best and we hope for the best.
Well, it's like, it was more entrepreneurial was the intent of this quote, but I think it definitely applies here. And they said is that if information was all it took, which is what you're describing with, child psychologists and principals, if information was all it took, we would all be billionaires with six pack abs. If all it took was knowing, because especially in the era we live in now, information is at the fingertips constantly. All of it is all there for you to use, but there's different elements. And I think that's the biggest thing that has come out of the show is so many of us dealing with the guilt, the anxiety, whatever you want to call it, of parenting, of like, am I doing the right thing? And I like kind of what you're saying is that, well, if you're doing it, then one could argue that you're doing the right thing because it is impossible to know if what you're doing is the exact right thing to do because you're asking a parent to have foresight, to have the ability to see into the future and know the outcome of every choice that they make. And that's virtually like even yourself, like in the I've had my example of there was a time my son wouldn't take cold medicine and I was trying. He for a brief moment, he would take it and then he regressed back and he has a very weak gag reflex where he just vomits and he's kind of outgrown that significantly now. But I literally had a 3-hour standoff with him where he was just like, I don't want to take it. I don't want. And I had a friend who's like, why would you do that? And I said, because when you're in it, you think I'm 30 seconds away from this being over. At every turn, I'm like, I am almost there. And I'm just not wired to be a guy who gives up. And in retrospect, do I look back at that and go, that was a horrible idea? Yes. But that's impossible for me to know when I'm doing it. There's no way that I can know until I've had the experience of having done it. And
that's,
we all need to give ourselves the grace of that. The grace of that we're all working it on the fly. We're all making it up as we go. And you're going to fuck it up. And that's
a
given.
And we all are different. We come from different backgrounds. Right. We have different DNA.
Different perspective, different priorities. Yes.
Everything. And I try to do this with myself. And I try to say, do not judge another parent. And I really try to live by that. And I try to be as open as possible, because sometimes you look at these kids and you're like, that kid has gone crazy. Like, you're like, yeah. That 13-year-old girl is like, or that boy, they're going down the wrong road. And you're like, oh, wow. I don't know if I want my kid around that.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. Oh, I don't know if I want my kid around, birds of a feather flock together. Like, how does this go? But you know what? Again, it's, and then other parents will, that kid's gone crazy. Oh, do you see? It's just, it starts the whole Lord of the Flies thing. And all the parents are like, oh God, do you see what she did today?
Yeah.
And you're just like, okay. And I try to focus on my household. So what'll happen is my daughter will come home and say, XYZ went down, which is always to me off the charts in some way, because she goes to a fancy private school and I think it takes it to a whole new level.
Mm.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. And sometimes it's some of her good friends. And I'm like, how do you feel about that? What do you think? And I'm like, what did you do when this happened? Did you sit back and watch, or did you say, hey, that's not so cool? And I don't even know how I got to this point, but I just, my mind started going on this instance where one of the little girls took a picture and sent it to, took a Snapchat of a girl twerking in her underwear and sent it to a boy at another school.
Oh.
And my daughter came home and she was like, oh my God, you're not gonna believe what happened. And I happen to love all these girls. So I was like, oh, and then I'm like, do I tell the mom?
Right.
Do I? And then I went, you know what? Here's the thing. Don't do that. You did, like, right. Take this as a lesson.
Yep.
This Snapchat, this whole Insta, don't do that to someone else. And the next time you see that friend, just make sure that you, if you have it in you to say, hey, that wasn't so cool. And I was like, and you make the choice of whether you want to hang out with that person for a while or whether you'd rather take a break.
Yeah.
So I try to keep it in my house where I'm not like, that kid's bad, because I don't think it's bad. I think it's, they're all experimenting.
Right. That's exactly what I was thinking, is that how can we, you know, give ourselves the grace, but then also not allow them, kids, to have the grace of making poor choices. You know what I mean?
Well, like, it's interesting because some parents don't like to give that. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Cause I want my kid to get the grace and I want the grace.
Right. Right.
Right. So, you know, it's, and I mean, I don't know if what I'm doing is right, but we will know when she goes to therapy in 6 years.
Her therapist will be able to be the real judge.
Right?
We'll
send her to the specialist.
Whatever percentage of money goes to co-pays. That's how we decide if we succeed as parents. The other thing I want to talk about, too, is because I'm fascinated by this concept, and I think it is kind of an underlying fear that a lot of, especially if you're not a single parent, like if you're in you've got a traditional setup and you've got a partner in this and you're parenting. I wrestled with it. It was probably one of the lowest points in my marriage was when my second son was born. And we just, as we joke, is that we went from being, you know, we outnumbered the child and it was very easy to where now we were man on man. And in one of us was going to work, we were in zone coverage. And it was hard. It was hard. I literally felt like I was living with this person and we were raising a child together like it was our job and it wasn't about our connection. And then oftentimes when they're younger, you don't have the money sometimes to be able to go out for date nights and you don't have the perspective because, like what we talked about before, you're going through this for the first time to think, you don't have to go to a movie and go out to dinner. You can literally just go drive around the block for 30 minutes and have conversation.
Totally.
And that can be enough. That can literally be enough.
You can just go sit in the car in front of the house.
You can find a dark parking garage and fuck, and that still is good. That is a win.
It's totally fine.
In fact, that's arguably better than any movie or rom-com you'll go see for your relationship, I would imagine. But
I think so.
Right?
Yes.
So how is it? What? Talk to me about to your process. Like, how has it been for you, for your, and I don't know if you meant this for your relationship with your spouse or if you meant it with your kids or both, but I'm fascinated by this. Talk to me about how your relationship changes as your kids get older.
Well, now that I have a 13-year-old who basically is an 18-year-old and an 18-year-old who's an 18-year-old because he's a boy.
Yeah.
So you know, before our conversations were usually like we'd go to dinner or we'd be at the baseball field all weekend. So there was really, there wasn't a lot of sex. There wasn't a lot of talk. And when the conversation was, it was talking about our kid,
our son,
the baseball, the people at the baseball. It's anything you can defer from discussing yourselves, right? It's like the sky, the kids, the school, the parents, the this. So you're so focused on how the wheel is going with your kids. And once, and I'll touch on this quickly, but I don't want to sit on it forever, is my son, once he was sick, so it also shifted because I kind of had a breakdown when my son got sick.
Understandable.
I mean, it was crazy when it happened, literally and figuratively.
Yes.
But I did. I really broke down. So that for 2 years, I was trying to find, like, we were with our kid and we were still taking care of our son and I was taking care of my daughter, and not even to the extent my husband was on location. So it was where our conversations were basically like health, school. Yeah. And then when he come home, I kind of hated him. Right. I was like, you're not here. And I'm going through all of this by myself. So it's almost like I was a single parent, but I wasn't. And now that our son is healthy and our daughter's older, sometimes we just sit there and look at each other. We almost don't know how to start it.
Well, kids are such a destroyer of intimacy on all levels. I'm not talking just sexually. I'm talking about, we have a sex and family therapist that comes on the show, and my friend makes fun of me, but she said something that really blows my mind, is that she said, women need to feel loved in order to have sex, and men need to have sex in order to feel loved.
Absolutely.
And so when you start talking about things like intimacy, and not just sexual intimacy, I'm saying being able to have a conversation, like if you and your husband had a chance to sit down where he could just let you vent about the frustrations of your day, right? And you get it off your chest and him have some like, wow, I'm so sorry you're going through that. But just to be able to have that, but even that in itself, because so much of your day is built around your kids, it's not really about what's going on in your head. You know what I mean? And because he's traveling for work, you don't get the daily check-in, right? If you do, maybe it's a Skype session because he's probably on location putting in 16-hour days, or you know what I mean?
Yes, like they're long days. Is. And no, it's usually, well, now I'm working. Right. So it's turned in. What I basically went and got a job.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm trying to get my career going. So I started doing stand up and I started going back to acting and I started trying to get my, which is hilarious at 46 on a whole other level. But it's like, I started focusing on myself where I was focusing solely on us, right? My unit. So he was like, wait a minute, where are you going? And he's kind of like, what? Whoa.
Well, and I could tell you from a guy's perspective, even though I was a stay-at-home dad, I would imagine, I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but I would imagine that there is an element where you're waiting for the light at the end of the tunnel where both kids are older, where now it's like you've given up this partner that you have in life, that you built this life, and she's taking care of the kids, you're paying the bills, right? Like everybody's got their roles and you kind of settle into that. And as a guy, I'm sure at some point you say, well, once the kids grow up, then I get my wife back.
Yes.
And now that's happened. But now the wife and you've been waiting, being second fiddle to these kids, rightly so, for so many years. And then now it's time for you to be first fiddle again. Only now there's another first fiddle. And that's, although all of these choices make sense, right? They're all not, nobody's being victimized here, but it's hard as a guy to wrap your mind around that, to go, well, now I got to play second fiddle to your career when I've been waiting to get my Jessica back. You know what I mean?
Have you been talking to my husband secretly?
No, it's easy, right? It's easy for us all to relate to that. It's universal that we all wrestle with that kind of idea, that concept. And he's a smart enough guy to know that it's not 1952 and he's not John Hamm and Mad Men where he could say, listen, sugar tits, why don't you go make me a Tom Collins and stop talking about this career bullshit? You're lucky you could vote. You know what I mean?
He can't
do that. And that's just because of the whole Me Too thing. I mean, he's on eggshells all the time now.
Oh yeah. No, trouble. Me Too just kicked it up.
He's got his head on a swivel, man. He doesn't know where it's coming from, what direction. No, that's unfair. I'm sorry. part. But,
hilarious and true. true. But it is like there is that. Well, and I do.
And
get
it's unfair
it.
For you to go back at it from the other angle. It's unfair too for you to be able to be like, so I just gave up close to 20 years of my life to focus on the kids, which is our job. That's what we should do when we have kids, right?
Right.
And now that's over, and now I should immediately start focusing on you and not spend any time on me. You know what I mean? And I think the clearer head should prevail in that it's an unfortunate part for him, but it's as a guy we kind of have to nip this stuff in the butt where we have to go, okay, listen. She's got to overcorrect, right? She's got to, because Jessica doesn't do anything half-ass. So she's got to run. She's got a full sprint into this stuff. And eventually she will slow down a little bit. Yes. And it will find a homeostasis. And then I'll get some me time with Jessica. But
And it is. It's settling down. It's been a big 2 years. And it's been a big push and a big like, right. And I'm out. And of course, now I'm on Instagram and posting and trying to do my videos, which is awful. And oh my God. And doing and trying to get that going. And now I kind of come back down. Even my kids were like, literally at one point, they're like, are you ever going to make us dinner again?
Yeah.
Like, are you ever? I mean, somebody needs to go to the store. And I'm like, get on the app, people.
Yeah.
Get on the app. Like, order DoorDash. Somebody handle it. And by the way, it's been great for my kids that I've taken this on, even though it's been a huge transition. But also for my husband, it's starting to calm down, and it's like, okay, we got to mesh. We got to find where we belong. And I actually said, I'm like, we don't even know if we know each other anymore.
Right.
And that's the kicker, is when your kids start to get older and your whole goal the whole way up is we're together. We got to get these kids. We got to keep them healthy and keep them smart and get them into the right school and get them in the whole, make sure everything looks fantastic for them. Right. Create that fantasy world for them, whatever it is. And then they're up there and they need you, but you do have the space. And it's like, do I know you? Mm-hmm. Who are you? And do we even like each other anymore? I mean, do we have the same hobbies? You know, it's like, do we like the same? And one day he came home and he goes, what are you listening to? And I was listening to like kid music, because I listen to everything. And I'm like, oh, I'm running to like Drake. And he's like, what? And he's,
that's just like, what you want to hear from your wife in your 40s. Is that I'm running to this sexy black guy who's 26.
Totally. Like, so amazing. And he's singing just to me because it's in my ears. This song was made for me.
One could argue that you now have more intimacy with Drake than you do your husband.
That is so true.
Also, you're sweating more with Drake than you are.
I'm getting. Everything is happening. My cheeks are flushed. And I'm with them for like an hour and a half.
Yes,
like,
an hour and a half.
My husband's like, where's our set? I'm like, dude, I've been hanging with Drake for an hour and a half. He's like, Drake's getting more of you than me.
At least 20 minutes more of endorphins than your husband is getting.
Totally.
That's great. That's fun.
Poor guy. I mean, listen.
But it all makes sense. And I'm glad that you brought this up, because I think what it does is it gives for those of the people that are listening to this that are new, right, that they're starting out, is that, and I've heard this, there's another reporter that she was a very career-driven woman throughout her kids' childhood and struggled to find the balance, but an amazing mom with two amazing kids. And I'm talking about Jane Wells, who I came across through KFI, AM 640, the radio station, and she's been on the show a couple times, and her kids are now in their 20s, and her younger kid just got married. Her older kid is a prosecutor for a city in Northern California. And so she's very happy with them, but she still kind of feels like, did I do enough? And her biggest thing is that she goes, you gotta do date night the whole time. You gotta, from jump, you gotta find a way to stay connected. Cause like she said, she's been through it. The kids eventually move on, and you gotta be able to know who that person is across from you. And she went through the exact same thing you're describing with her husband. She went through, it's the same thing where you just start to go, well, who is this? And her, ironically, her husband also had a job where he traveled. He was a pilot.
Uh-huh.
So he traveled for a living and had to go away, but he held down the fort when she was working, and they would be like the ships passing in the night. But I think the moral of the story is, when you're younger and you're trying to go, you're so focused on how am I going to raise this kid? I think, tell me what you think of this, Jessica. I think the kid isn't as hard as you think and that you're naturally going to fail. So give yourself that grace and that the one thing that you can control and the one thing you can maintain and do have awareness is that relationship you have with that other person. And that if it's just as simple as setting aside 10, 15 minutes to hear the other person out about what's going on in their day, and you really, the easiest thing to get to hold on to, like a backpack of bullshit, is how you're always envious of the other person's life, right? Like if you're home with the kids, well, they get to go to work and have a conversation with an adult, those fuckers. They're traveling all over. This son of a bitch is in New Orleans right now, and I'm willing to bet, right, that he's there on location, just humid, sweating his balls off, working 16 hours, going, good God, I wish I could just have a cold Hefeweizen with an orange slice and talk to Jessica right now and wrestle around with the kids. You know what I mean? Like, we everybody's doing their thing and we're all jealous of the other side of the coin. But it's hard to see that. It's hard to develop that perspective. And so you maintain that connection. That's how you can do it, is you let the other person bitch and you be aware that, yes, there's hard parts to their side, too. There's hard parts when you're the breadwinner and they're stressing that.
It's really about mutual respect.
Yeah. Nailed it.
At the end of the day, it is about respecting what each person is doing. My job, what being a parent, had just as much, well, and more value of my job being home as his did going out and making the money, and to value each other in what we offer and bring her to the table.
Yep. And I'm going to ruin your eloquent point with this stupid joke.
That's why I put this disclaimer. I love that because it's very rare I make those.
Because here's the thing. It's a perfectly nailed point. It's what we're going to end this segment on. But there's a little bit of truth in what I'm about to say, is that if you find yourself in that rut where you are frustrated with the other person and the lack of appreciation that you're getting from them, I think, in my experience, the universal fix for that is to go down on the other person. So if you're a guy who is bringing home the bacon, right, and you're stressed with your job and you just wish that your wife would appreciate you a little bit more, then what you do is one night you go home and you say, hey, listen, go, you know, give her some time. If I don't know if she does like a nighttime shower or whatever. But you let her go do that, and then
I like that you threw in it, make sure there's a shower.
Well, it doesn't have to be. I'm not saying it's a requirement.
Because that says a lot about you.
Here's what I'm saying. I'll give you a little bit more about me. I'm not saying it's a requirement. I just feel like I know, at least understand the feminine brain enough to know that if you start making that move and she's got a young kid and she hasn't had time to at least take a shower, she's going to find zero enjoyment in whatever it is you're about to do.
You're right.
Because all she's going to be thinking is like, oh my God, what if it's just horrible down there? What if it's, what's he dealing with down there? What if it is like New Orleans all over again?
Well, listen, we've all had that as well.
Right, exactly. Okay. And it's no picnic, I'm sure, the other side. I just have no perspective on that angle. But here's my point is that, honest to God, if you just do that and read a book, we talked about it with Rachel for the people who listen to the show. Is that there's a great book out there, She Comes First. If you're a guy who doesn't know how to navigate that that area, or you, even if you think you're nailing it, let's be honest, go check out the book, because this is a guy who studied it for a living, and he may have a point or two. Yeah. So I'm saying go do that, because here's what happens. It is impossible for you to not, A, be vulnerable. It is a very, like, almost sacrificial, intimate act that you can do. And I think it could be. And I wish Rachel was here to back me up on this. And the next time she comes on the show, we'll run this up her flagpole, for lack of a better way of putting it. But that's a great way to hit a reset button on the appreciation level. Yeah? What do you say, Jessica?
Yeah.
Right?
I think, yeah. No. That's right. I mean, that, and actually, I don't know. I think I'm a strange woman. I don't think I'm a normal, because to me, it's like, just hear me.
Yes. No, that's not strange. That's everyone.
I will fuck you all day and night.
Right.
But you just got to hear me. Not listen. Hear me.
Right. Not just sit there and it's funny, because through the love languages book, I learned that my wife's love language is quality time, physical touch, and words of affirmation. It's like a three-way tie. Yeah. So what I learned is that I'm a multitasker, right? So like I can check an email and listen to what she's saying. I'm hearing everything that she's saying, but there's a big difference between me hearing her and her feeling heard, right?
Yes.
So what I have learned after I read about that is that I have to put down the phone and I have to zero in on what she's saying and look at her so that she knows. And And
absolutely.
It really does go a long way to like what Rachel said on the show, is that women need to feel loved in order to have sex, and men. So if you want to have sex as a dude, you got to make her feel loved. You got to put your own bullshit temporary aside. I don't care how many times you feel like you've taken the high road. You got to take it another fucking time, dude. And especially, I think it goes an extra mile if you've got a wife who's home taking care of those kids. And I think Jessica would back me up on this
because she's been there. Yeah.
It's so easy to get wrapped up in our own bullshit of like, listen, I've been working for 16 fucking hours in a place I didn't want to be. And now I got to come home and I got to kiss your ass too. Or I'm kissing ass trying to climb the corporate ladder and I got to suck up to my fucking partner in life, the person who's supposed to get there and be there for me. Yes, you got to.
But then
what
makes me laugh is the wife who's taking care of the kids is like, I've had to deal with all these kids and their crankiness and their crying and their wounds and their this. And then the parents that go with the kids, and they're just like, I had to feed them breakfast, lunch and dinner. Here's the thing. When you're a stay at home parent, you don't get to sleep.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're 24 hours on call every day.
Yep.
There is no break.
No sick
there
days.
You don't get sick days. You don't get a break.
Yep.
If someone's waking up at 4 a.m, you're up with them.
Right.
If someone's having something, you're with them. And I think, and I say this, it's so important to know whether you're the man or the female or whatever it is who is at home. It is important to recognize that there is no holiday.
Yeah. Everybody's looking for appreciation, I think. And that's what I took from Jessica's eloquent point about the respect, is that you just need to respect each other. And a big part of showing that respect is showing the appreciation for what the other person does. And I think if you can do that in a conversation while you're driving around town because you don't have the coin to go out to a dinner or a fancy dinner or even fucking Taco Bell or to go to a movie. I mean, movies, I think, while they're great as a release, they're not good for date night, because the whole point is you got to be able to talk. You got to be able to connect with that other person. So go be schmaltzy and share a fucking milkshake, or just, like I said, drive around the car and just go, how was your day? What kind of bullshit did you deal with? And start there, and you'll get back to where you were after a few of those, I think. Yeah. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, I mean, I don't know. I mean, everyone's listening to this, but go to that spot. There's always a spot. We have Mulholland. We have, you know, where
Makeout Point is what you're talking about.
Yes. But like, just sit there, look at the view and talk about your life.
Yeah.
There is something to be said about that, where you can kind of take yourself out of the city.
Yep.
And you can just go, okay, hey, this is like, let's talk. If you can't afford dinners, but God, at this point, go for a walk around the block and
yes.
talk.
Yes. Oh, walking is great. And I got a little tip to the dudes too, because you're not going to think about it, even if you love her to death, is hold her hand, man. Hold her hand,
oh,
put your arm
God,
around
so,
her.
Yes.
It means all the world, especially because it snaps them out of it. It makes them feel connected. And you can't just touch them when you're trying to get laid, because it's a huge red flag.
You cannot just attack women at all times. You cannot do it. Okay. It doesn't work.
Great stuff.
You're right. The hand holding, by the way, that for me in particular is so intimate.
Yeah.
So intimate. I can't just putting the fingers, entwining the fingers. I don't know why. It's so young.
Yes.
You know,
it's cute. It's
so
adorable. It's nostalgic. It's everything.
Yes.
It's very non-sexual, but it's affectionate. I stumbled upon it accidentally. We were walking with the kids and the kids were doing something cute in front of me and I just didn't think of it. I just reached out and I grabbed my wife's hand, and I probably hadn't held her hand in months, I would guess. Yeah. I mean, we were grown-ups with kids at this point. And I literally, her visceral response was to, like, she just had like a relaxing
a sigh.
Sigh.
Yeah.
And it in my mind, I was like, oh shit, I should be doing this more often. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I did not think of that. So,
but what's even more interesting is that you noticed her response.
Right.
How many people would do it and not even register?
I got lucky. I mean, you could argue that there were. I did. Well, I mean, I don't know if I got lucky that day also, but what I'm saying is I got lucky in that moment that I noticed it, because
yes.
There's probably tons of other signals that I missed. I mean, it's not like I'm super attentive to that stuff. I mean, I like to think that I'm very aware, but I'm sure I miss little signals all the time. I mean, sure, I still have the wife who gets up in the morning and says, you know, I kind of wanted you last night. I'm like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with that statement? Like,
that is amazing. She wanted to, but she didn't want to do the work. I like that.
Oh, that's what that means. You're the first one to break that down for me.
You know what happened? She thought about it. She just laid in bed and she was like, you know, we could be doing it right now. She thought about it probably for 10 or 15 minutes and then fell asleep.
Yeah. That's it goes.
No, okay, but she thought, and she's like, if he made the move, I would do it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure she had the full conversation and she's like, all right, I'm good.
She casts it to fate to decide. Meanwhile, I spend every night going, we could probably do it right now. If we could do it, I bet we could do it right now. You know what? If she makes a move, because I can't always make a move, then I just seem like a perv.
I have a question for you that's probably, but since we're asking these questions.
Yeah, go for it.
So you were saying for sex, how long do you think is like normal? I mean, I don't even know normal. But
yeah,
like,
we were talking about Sting earlier. Yeah.
We were going to go back to Sting and the tantric sex.
Yeah.
I laugh because I'm more like, okay, let's get it over with. I got shit to do.
Yes.
Even in the middle of the night, I have something to do, I think.
Yes.
you
have to get
men,
to sleep.
When
you grow up as a mom, right? Obviously you were already grown up when you had kids, but I'm saying when you've grown through your life as a mom, that thing at night that you have to get to is sleep, because no amount of sleep, no matter how much sleep you're getting now versus when your kid, it's never enough. That's just what it is to be, even if you're a dad, I imagine being a stay at home parent. But I've noticed that even though my wife worked, like she just never gets enough sleep, period. And I would venture a guess. I think a fair clinical answer, if I were to dub myself, if I were to get an honorary PhD in sexual intercourse from, where would I get that? Cornell. I would want, because of the corn L like sound in it. But I would say probably 15 to 20 minutes, I think is a good solid number. I think, because here's what the benefit is of having marital intercourse, especially after you've had kids and they've grown up, is that you really get a strong sense of where the other person's buttons are, and you have the cliff notes into those sexual buttons.
Absolutely.
And so it becomes, you have the ability, that history gives you the ability to push those buttons and nail them in just the right sequence. Now, with great power comes great responsibility. So the problem with that power is that you can, especially as a guy, I think we're naturally wired sexually to kind of think this way, is you could think, well, if I just hit those buttons in this order, then I've accomplished my goal. But then now you're hitting the same buttons in the same order.
Right.
And there is a chance for lack of spice. And women are so sexually complex that it is such a hard thing for a guy to navigate. And my opinion is that, like, sometimes you want it different. Sometimes you're okay with a little rough trade, but sometimes it needs to be intimate.
You really have to gauge the air.
Yes.
Like you have to kind of go, okay, you almost have to be a little psychic.
Yes.
What's happening today?
Only a meteorologist is more accurate than the ability to gauge a woman's sexual preference in any given moment. And they don't know shit about whether or not it's going to rain and what time.
They're always off.
They at least have some kind of science to back up what they're doing, right? And yet they still have zero efficacy. And so for a guy to have the same thing. So what I've decided is that you and it's hard as a guy too to have some kind of comfort in this, but here's what I've learned from my conversations with Rachel. It goes back to what Jessica and I were talking about. You have to develop those intimate conversations, and it doesn't have to be just about sexual talk. But when you start talking about your day, you feel like you have a strong connection about your day to day and all of that stuff, you can pepper into your lady. You could be like, you know, hey, just so you know, I've been really wrestling around with this idea all day today while I was at work. I was thinking about this kitchen island that we have in the granite countertop, right? This is how you set it up. And you say, and I know this is going to make me sound like a weirdo to you, but it has been running through my brain all day to bend you over this kitchen island and have my way with you. And you could just lob that out there. And based on her mood in that moment, right, it's either going to be because...
Yes, it's either going to fly or it's not. But either way, you can't be offended.
You can't, because here's the thing, is that I think to a certain extent, especially, and I hope I'm not being sexist or insensitive, but I think if you're a lady who's had a couple of kids, that I've seen it in my wife where you wrestle with the insecurity of what having kids can do to your body. And so getting a little bit of that kind of animal attraction coming from your partner, I think makes you feel a little bit good. Even if in that moment you're sitting there rocking the ponytail and some yoga pants that you've been wearing for the past 3 days, right?
Totally.
Like, even if that's what you're dealing with, hearing that, to know that you could still have a man,
you've got
desire you to that raw animal level, is even if you're not in the mood and she's going to say fuck off, like, you know, kind of thing. But just so you know, fellas, that fuck off, that you've planted a seed in there, and that seed could potentially grow into something greater. And every once in a while, don't be afraid to make a move on that level. And if she's not having it, she's not having it. But you know,
okay. That's
what you just go, my bad, I'm so sorry. It's just, and you
You don't even have to apologize. You literally are like, okay, cool, and move on.
But here's why I think it's important that you have, if you can't get angry, obviously. But what you can do is you could say, I didn't mean to put any pressure on you, but I just, even if she does, here's the thing. Women don't understand that we can see you in those 3 days of yoga pants and an off-kilter ponytail and still find you just as fucking hot as if you were to wear red lipstick and a tight form-fitting dress and
so
nine-inch heels. You know what I mean? Like, there's a thing that women don't understand about a guy's brain, especially a guy who likes the family lifestyle, that there's something about a chick who looks like a mom and a lady who's been being the mom all day that is very sexy and very attractive. But it's not normal for us to express it in that way. And I think, but right. It's a way of building intimacy. But if I got to tell you guys, if you're in a rut and you're not connected, you got to work on that other connection first, because she's nowhere near. You got to start talking. You got to start having a dialogue. And then once that's there, you start peppering in some of those pervy animal thoughts that you have about her and make them real. I'm serious. Tell me if I'm wrong, Jessica. If your husband came home from a trip to where, God knows where, at a shoot, and he said, listen, I've been gone making this, you know, movie for all, and I swear to God, and he tells it as like kind of a cute, like lighthearted story, just saying, I'm like, remember that time when we went to that trip and we stayed in that Courtyard Marriott, and you could be like, what? No, I don't. And you go, I'm just telling you, man, we had sex in the bed, in the shower. And I just keep going back to that. And I just got to tell you, I think you're so fucking hot and I can't stop thinking about you. I'm sorry if it makes me seem like a perv, but I want you to know, because I think you're hot. I think that that's a nice thing to hear. Am I wrong?
Yes, I think you're I mean, yes, I would probably be like, yeah, okay.
But is it off-putting, or would you kind of be flattered?
I can't speak for other women. I think I'm different than most women. I'm very masculine. Like I'm a layered, right? So yep. I want to be heard. Super important. My heart is connected to my vagina. Absolutely.
Right.
That's how it works. Like, you're not getting in there unless you're connecting. It just won't happen. But I also am kind of like, oh, okay. Just be good. Be kind. Like, literally, I'm like, be kind, hear me. I listen. I'm always listening. I'm a talker and I love to listen. So I'm always listening. Be kind, and then just bend me over the bed. Okay, right. That's it. Like, and let's get the job done and be done. I am more like, wham, bam, let's get out.
Right.
I don't like this. And the romantic-y stuff, I can enjoy it sometimes, but I'm like, oh, I'm good.
But that's what I'm saying. Here's the thing. I think, and you tell me if I'm off key here, in that I think that more women are like you than you think. And I think what happens, because it's not like, I don't know, it's not like women get together and really genuinely talk about their sex life unless you have like one other friend.
You're right.
And you feel like that one other friend, the reason why you'd say that is because you're so connected with that other person, so you could be that honest. And now you're the only two chicks who feel that way.
Right.
But in actuality, is that for some reason in our culture, if you enjoy sex and it doesn't have to be out of a romance novel with Fabio and a slightly open white button-up shirt, and you don't desire deep eye contact every time you make love to someone, that means that you like to have sex like a dude and not a chick. And
You're right.
I haven't had a lot of partners. I've only been with four other women besides my wife, and they were all in high school. So I have zero perspective and credibility on this.
God, what's happening?
I know, right? But yes. I'm saying I think that is probably, from the experts I've talked to, not only on the show but outside of here, is that I think that that's more likely. I think that that there are probably, I would venture to guess, 80% of the women listening to this podcast right now would lump themselves in with you and go, I'm kind of like a dude, or I don't like that. Or I would also venture a guess that they're like, you know what? I don't mind being thrown down on the bed. Does that make me a slut? Or, you know what I mean? And that it's about finding comfort in your own, right? It's about finding comfort in your own skin and in your own marriage.
Well,
But the
and
big,
it's very personal,
yes,
right? That's
yes.
very personal for each and every relationship.
And you can't get to having those conversations about what you're comfortable with if you're not even talking about what you did
Absolutely.
That day. It's too big a jump. And I think it's too big a jump for a lot of dudes. And that the difference in the way dudes are wired is that, you know, a lot of people like to think that we're ready to do all that crazy stuff all the time, but not all of us are. I mean, here's the thing. If my wife came home one day, depending on the day I've had, and said, you know, listen, I need you to throw me down. I want you to choke me. I got to be honest. Even I'm a guy, and I'd be like, fuck, man, that does not sound. I'm not lying. I'm partially afraid to show my wife 50 Shades of Grey for fear that she's going to want me to beat the shit out of her for the rest of her life, and I just don't have it in me to do it.
Like, okay.
I
read the book. I love it. I actually have a comedy skit about it, and I will tell you, she will not want you to beat the shit out of her. Okay, I can promise you. She may want you to have a helicopter and a lot of money and some fancy building somewhere, but I can promise you, she will not want you to beat the shit out of her. It's so funny. I love those books. I love trash. I love reading erotica, and I love, that's the other thing. I love reading erotica. I actually write erotica. I enjoy it. And my husband and I had a conversation about it one day, and I'm like, just because I read erotica doesn't mean I'm going to fuck you like this erotic beast. Right. Like, I mean, it's like people can love scary movies or horror films or horror books. That doesn't make them killers. Like, you know, it's so interesting to have, like, we all are very individual. I like to, my husband sent me a vibrator for my 40th birthday.
That's awesome.
And I was like, oh my God. At first my kids opened it up. So it was totally a scene. And
that's great.
That was a scene in a horror film for me. That's like, ah, what was that?
That's great.
I put it in the closet. I didn't throw it away. I just put it in the closet.
That's great.
And then I pulled it out one day and I was like, oh my God, why didn't I know about this?
Right. Right.
Like, I was like, what the heck? I mean, geez, this is amazing. No, and then I became addicted and I do. Oh no, it was crazy. And then all my friends, and I do talk about sex to my friends. And it's funny because I'm very open about a lot of stuff. So I'm like, oh, da, da, da. And people are like, oh my God, did you say that?
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, because I want to know. So if I give you a little of me, will you give me a little you back? So I can kind of gauge. Sometimes I wonder, I'm like, am I normal? Am I not normal? I use that a lot, but I don't believe in normal. But, you know, like, do I fit in the range? I mean, I'm always curious in seeing where I'm at, because my entire life, I always felt like I was a little.
If you think about it, it's a thing that for the most part, Rachel, our sex and family therapist, is in my head, is that not everybody's wired this way, right? You can't really speak in generalities and all of that stuff. But I think it is fair to say that a good chunk of us, and not intended to alienate people that aren't this way, but a good chunk of us enjoy having sex, right? It's a thing that we all enjoy. And yet, as we've talked about with both Rachel and Kyle, it's not something we talk about. It's not something we even take the time to educate ourselves on. We're all just winging it, much like parenting, only there are probably, we spend a lot more time reading books about parenting than we do reading books about pleasing our partners or even making sure that we're pleased ourselves or what would be involved in that. And there's tons
and
of
what
statistics.
What works for us.
Right. Right.
Individually. Yes, absolutely.
Because we're all worried that what if we're into something that's super weird to a certain extent, I imagine, or is what I'm worried. Like, my thing is, because I'm married to my high school sweetheart, is that I'm constantly worried that what if, because we literally started having sex with each other at 17, and that now she's forced to have sex with a 17-year-old boy for the rest of her life, because that's all the life experience. I didn't have like a Mrs. Robinson to take me in and she, you know what I mean? And to just go, oh my God, these are all the things that, you know, that I didn't, there's none of that. None of that.
Yeah, but you watch porn.
Yeah, but that's, here's the thing. If
porn's crazy. I just watched it for the first time. It's crazy.
Right. You can't honestly look at that and think of that as a viable, like, I've had porn-like sex, but never to that quite extent. And so what the moral of my story, which I think
Should I pay you?
Yeah.
I'll send you money and you tell me how it went.
That's a good point. Although that is my thing. I've always wanted to see what it was like to do it with a professional. Like, it's just to see how different it is.
But you're curious.
Right.
You're like, are they that good?
I don't think
so. Is it that good?
I don't hear, because here's the thing. I'm wired to be monogamous. So I think I would be like a chick who hasn't had a shower yet. And my man's going down on me. Sorry for that visual, listeners. But but yeah, I think that to kind of button all this together is that I think what we've learned today with Jessica, if nothing else, is that we have to have respect for ourselves, not only as parents, right? Give ourselves that grace that we know we're going to screw up, but we also need to have mutual respect and grace for ourselves and our partners within our relationship and make sure that that's a focus and that we need to talk. You got to talk, you got to work shit out, and you got to not worry, find comfort in your own skin. The reason why you chose this person to have in your life is because they accept you for who you are. And even though you think that they don't, chances they do. Like that, they're invested. I really firmly believe that. I talk a lot about this from the male perspective because as a guy who went through a wife feeling very self-conscious about her body changing after having kids. And I talk about it in my act because I think it needs to be made fun of because that's how we desensitize things and make people feel more comfortable about it. But I love it. Every time somebody tweets me and it's a mom who listens and they put that hashtag in their hot moms club, I guarantee you every single one of the moms listening to this show are fucking hot as hell. And you got a man. If you're not married and you're a single mom, there's a dude out there who is thinking about you right now. So trust me, walk through your life, feel good about yourself. No, obviously I'm not saying it defines you as who you are as a person. That's not what it, I'm not saying women are purely sexual beings, but it's okay that you feel that way, I think, if that's what makes you feel
good. Oh, and especially in your 40s.
Right? Right?
I have my friends that are the 40s, insane, amazing, amazing. You really, as a woman, get to own, you almost fall into your skin if you haven't already.
I like that.
You really do. I find that my girlfriends were in a wide range from like 38 to 54. And I've seen this where we just kind of own who we are. And we're sexual and sensual, not being perfect, not being anything, but just kind of through life and our experiences and our growth.
Yeah.
It's made us these sensual human beings. And to take all of the kids and the life and everything you've had and your experiences and go, ugh, I'm so worth it. I deserve it. And I'm fucking amazing. That was just my female speech because I think it's so important. There are many years I felt uncomfortable having my kids, the whole thing. And I think that is just, I feel more confident now with all my imperfections than I ever have in my life.
No greater a moment to go out on, Jessica. Well, well said. And I mean that with absolute sincerity. Thank you very much for being on the show. You can follow Jessica on Instagram at JT Winter. Now, is it Winther or is it Winter with the H sound in there a little bit?
Winther.
Winther. With an H. So the spelling and links are all in the description of this episode, but it's JT Winther. And you can also follow her on Twitter at Winther Jessica. As well. And that's where you could find out if you got any stand-up dates coming by. Most of your shows, I would imagine, are here in Southern California, right?
Well, yes, I'm trying to get on tour, but it's hard with the kids.
Oh, yeah, 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 trust me.
Even though they're older, it's summer. They're like, it's still.
They're still up your ass. I totally get it. But here's what's great is that there are tons of videos of her stand-up. And like she said, she's doing videos. So throw some love her way because I guarantee you there isn't a single person listening to this episode that hasn't listened to Jessica share her life, her perspective, and it hasn't in some way either validated your own thoughts and opinions or made you feel a little bit better about your own struggle. So throw some love back her way. Again, JT Winther on Instagram, at Winther Jessica on Twitter, and hit her up, all right? On behalf of the fantastic and amazing Jessica Winther, this is Justin Worsham saying, hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.